Well, it's the 14th of January, 2016, and we're sitting here with Godfrey Boddenham, who is obviously ex-Fielding and Platt. So Derek and I are just about to start interviewing him and asking him what he did and where he worked, etc., at the company. So firstly then, Godfrey, how did you actually come to start working at Fielding's?
That was because of a guy named John Forion, who commonly known as Lofty, who was in the 1947 intake.
That's incredible, because I think he's the bloke that married us. But because did he turn into the Reverend John?
He turned into the Reverend John, and I think ultimately he became a canon.
Did he? Wow! He used to work in the tool room.
That's
yeah,
right. Absolutely.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
So, what year did you actually start then, Godfrey?
I started in the Intech of 1953, which at that time they were taken in August.
Right.
I'd left school the previous Christmas.
Yeah.
And as a fill-in, I went to work on the maintenance section of a local wool mill over in Stroud.
All right. So you mentioned school. Which school was that you went to?
I went to a school called Uplands School. My interest in Fielding and Platt was awakened by the fact that at school we did one afternoon a week of woodwork, and another the alternate week we did metalwork, and I happened to be fairly good at both, but metalwork was my preference. And I knew John Forion as a Stroud man, because he came from Stroud as well.
Right, yeah.
I knew John Forion, and I knew that he worked at Fielding Platt. So I had a chat with John, and he gave me the lowdown on how to approach it, who to talk to, or who to write to initially.
Yeah.
And it went on from there. I came along to Fielding's for an interview with Mark Phillips and Mr. Fairbrother.
Right.
And I was shown around the works, which I was a bit in awe of, because even though I'd worked on this maintenance aspect of a woolen mill, there was never anything quite as big as some of the machines or presses that I saw being erected there.
Yeah, I think it's quite impressive. People don't realise just what we did build. This woolen mill, I mean, it sounds like you lived in Stroud then.
I did, yeah.
This woolen mill, is that the woolen mill that I don't know if it's still doing it, makes the green bays for billiard tables?
Absolutely. There were three woolen mills in Stroud. The one that I was fortunate to get an interim job with was Lodgemoor Mills, and they belonged to Winterbottom, Strawn and Plain, who also had mills down at Ryford near Stonehouse, and one further up the valley towards Chalford.
All right.
But in addition to the billiard cloth, they also made all the scarlet cloth for the guards' uniforms.
Yeah, I was aware of that, because many years after I left Fielding's, I went there trying to sell them some screening equipment for the effluent that came out of the plant. So
okay.
I actually went round that mill in quite a lot of detail. But that was probably in the 1990s, so I don't know where they're still going. Anyway, we have digressed, as we said we would. So how did you actually get to work then, Godfrey?
Well, you have to sort of look at my circumstances, I was unfortunate in the sense that my parents had split up some time before, and I was actually in board and lodging.
Right.
So I started at Fielding and Platt on the princely sum of 27 and 6 shillings a week. And
you all smile at that one.
Yeah, yeah.
it cost me £1.02 to travel back and forwards either on the bus or on the rail car. They're very similar fare costs at that time. So I ended up for the first 2 years actually biking from Stroud to Fieldings.
And I suppose that was in all winds and weathers, and in the winter could have been interesting.
It was in all wind and weathers. I had a situation where it could be dry when I started out, and I dropped down the other side of Orspools to Ord's Gloucester, and it was very wet. But if I knew it was going to be very inclement weather, particularly in the winter with snow and ice and whatever, then I would go on the rail car. That presented a problem because the rail car got into Gloucester station with about 8 minutes to get from there down to Fielding. So I used to leg it down. Of course, it meant if it was late, then I didn't make the upper seven neuter. You had this situation at that time where if you weren't there on time, that was it. Somebody was the dime.
Mr. McGarriger, I think his name wasn't it? He was there when I was.
Well, his answer was, sorry, lad, but rules are rules. So I used to walk back up the town and spend the morning in the library and present myself for the afternoon. Eventually, it did get better. They allowed you the 3 minute late rule. And after that, if you were more than 3 minutes, you lost 15 minutes. You were allowed to start work, but you lost 15 minutes. But Mr. McGarriger decided that even if you were 5 minutes late, you start work immediately. So you weren't going to get paid for 10 minutes, but tough.
He was, let's just say, a bit of a character, that fella, yes.
He was a character. Unfortunately, a lot of his, shall I say, being kind, abrasiveness was down to the fact that he was a diabetic. And he was on, he had the type of diabetes where he needed to take insulin, and he wasn't always careful with taking it when he should have done.
I think we all have witnessed what happened to Mac when he, his medication was wrong. So we know how you got there and you know where you came from. Did you go into the craft school? Was that your first?
I started off in the craft school under Bert Ravenhill. But that was the year that John Davies came back out of National Service. So he, in my intake, he was assisting Bert for that particular year.
Yeah, I remember John saying this because obviously, you know, we're quite involved with John with the archives. He's one of our little committee. So you obviously went through, did all the machines and the and on the block, presumably in the craft school.
We did a week about, a week on the bench, a week on a machine. So yes, I was subjected to the. Taking the quarter inch off of the 2-inch square block and getting the surfaces 90% blue on the flat.
Plus or minus 2,000.
We've all got the bruised, well, the scars on our knuckles, etc., to show for that. So you, from what you were saying earlier, you went into electrical. So where did you actually go from the craft school?
Well, my initial move from the craft school was into the light machine shop under Reg Court at that time.
Yeah.
And I had 6 months there on a Herbert 2D machine.
Right. Amazing how these names come back, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
And there were some characters in there at that time, but one that particularly stands out was Fred Perkins. I don't know whether you...
Pete, do you know, other people have mentioned him, you know, during interviews, and he did stand out a bit, didn't he? Yes.
He did. His favourite trick was to drop a small cardboard box in the gangway, and there was nothing. They had to be absolutely clear. You never had anything in the gangway. And he used to have a metal block in it. And somebody would come along and think that shouldn't be there and give it a good kick out of the way. And
yeah, broken toes all round, yeah.
Yeah.
He did have other skills that maybe we shouldn't mention. Suds oil used to become a bit smelly, I think. I think that was him, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. There was another one that was attributed to him, and I never personally saw it, but I can quite believe it. I don't know if you remember when he went down the ramp past the stores. Turn left down the aisle between
into the heavy machine shop.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But on immediately you turned left, on the corner was an old guy on a shaper. And his name was Bill Gittins.
Yes.
Yeah. And he used to have periods off ill. Stomach problems.
Right? Yeah.
And eventually they discovered that he used to leave his tea on a cabinet over against the dividing wall between there and what was the other side, right? And upstairs in the light machine shop, there wasn't a wall. There was a wooden partition, which was boarded by wire mesh.
Right.
And it's alleged, and I can't prove it because I didn't see it, but Fred Perkins used to get Finian salts on a teaspoon.
Oh, dear.
The other guy I remember up there was a short, dark-haired guy, Tony Franklin. And he was what I call a first-class cricketer.
Oh, right.
Yeah. We used to play cricket in the back road of a lunch area.
Yeah.
Where you had stumps on a wooden block. And invariably, nobody would get him out.
Yeah.
And he could put a ball what height he liked or whatever direction he liked.
Yeah.
He used to play for a cricket team, but he should have been in a county team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the wrong job, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so what happened after that then?
Okay, I left the light machine shop and I went over to I call it the boiler yard, but it was fabrication. And I was put alongside a guy named Bill Wilde. He was quite old at that time, so I don't know whether he'd been there at your time.
It doesn't ring a bell to me, no. But,
he was all right. He was a good lad, and he used to let me get on with doing my own thing. Once he'd shown me the ropes, because they had these small electrically driven trolleys with nozzles on, so used to put them on a straight edge and cut the plate.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So you pre-draw what you wanted
on
the plate.
Yeah.
Then you'd set the straight edge to the various faces and cut those off.
Cut them up, yeah.
And whilst I was in there, because of my time on the maintenance aspect, the aspect of the woolen mill, I decided that I didn't want to stay in one shop permanently.
Yeah.
I, on the maintenance side, I liked the freedom. Although you didn't have a freedom of choosing a job, but you were never in one department for more than a few days or a week, and then you were called off to another one. So, you know, on the size of the field in a plot site, I thought, well, you know, I...
there's more variety there, really. Yeah,
I would prefer that. So I went and saw Harold Shenton and had a chat to him and explained how I felt. And he said, ah, well, you're not the only one. And I said, oh, no. He said, Wilfie Jenkins, who was also in my intake, he's expressed a similar desire as well. So he said, you might be disappointed. He said, he was before you in the queue. So I said, well, look, that's what I really prefer to do. And if you could register that, and if a vacancy comes up, I know Wilf will be considered about it, but so will I. Yeah. So, you know, we'll take it from there and see how it goes. And after my 6 months over in the fabrication department, Harold said to me, you'd be happy to know, he said that Les Hancock and Jack Wynn have agreed to take you both in.
Oh, right.
So how he did that, I don't know. But
so which department was that then?
It was the electrical maintenance and production department. That time, it was in the corridor on the way from the shipping office through to the office block. It was just past Nurse Edwards'
establishment.
Surgery. It was a fair size, but it was limited in terms of the stock they could keep in there and work as well. So I wasn't surprised when I came back out of the forces that it had been moved.
Was that when it moved upstairs, sort of in the corner of Hydraulic 2?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And when I came back out of the... because I went into the forces in November 57.
Mm-hmm.
When I came back out, it was there.
Yeah.
So Jack Wynn had retired, and Les Hancock and Ron Curtis were jointly running it.